Well, I've got a serious question for the critics of Israel and a word of encouragement in the midst of a world in a lot of pain right now.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I did have a blessed weekend, some time to rest, a lot of time to write some new articles, lots of work on the book of Job, some good time with God, some family time. But I'll tell you, I was chafing because I wanted to be sitting here talking to all of you about what is happening in the world today. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Can I just start, jump right in? I have a question for all the critics of Israel. I have a question for the Israel bashers. I have a question for the UN, which is suddenly concerned, not when Israel's getting bombarded with rockets day and night. No, not when its teenagers are kidnapped and murdered. No, but when Israel begins to fight back and defend itself and has to overcome citizens used as human shields by Hamas. I have a question for the critics of Israel and for the Israel bashers. It's an honest question. And my phone lines are open, 866-34-TRUTH. And I'm happy to hear with those of you who differ with me, be it from a Christian perspective or a Jewish perspective or a Muslim perspective or a secular Palestinian perspective or whatever. Please tell me, what would you like Israel to do? What would you like Israel to do? What would be the right response? Hamas remains sworn to Israel's destruction. Hamas initiated the recent hostilities. Hamas rejected ceasefire offers. Hamas is using civilians, including women and children, as human shields. Hamas is actively attempting to infiltrate Israel and murder, kidnap, and maim its people. So what would you like Israel to do? I'm very eager to hear from you. Some have been weighing in here and there on Facebook with nasty comments and some profane comments we've had to delete, some bashing and saying that Israel's guilty of genocide. What would you like Israel to do? You know, it's very interesting. Folks have been pointing out bias coverage in the media. I cited in my article a question for Israel's critics and some other recent articles I've written on that. Just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article to read these. But folks have been pointing out, those watching online and websites devoted to this, let's say the New York Times, if you're just following that, you get the feeling it's not fair. It's just not fair. I mean, Israel has all this firepower, and Israel has the Iron Dome, and not enough Israelis are dying. Well, a little bit better Sunday because more Israelis die, but that's the feeling you get. I mean, this running scorecard, how many civilians in Gaza have died or how many Palestinians have died, it's tragic. Let me say this plainly. It's tragic that there is all this death taking place. It is tragic that civilians are dying. It is tragic when Arab blood is shed just as much as when Jewish blood is shed. Those are tragic things in God's sight. I'm simply asking what you'd like Israel to do. People have been pointing out how if you look at New York Times coverage, you'll see Israel tanks, bombs, soldiers, and then you'll see Palestinians weeping at a funeral. And you get a certain impression. In point of fact, Israel did not start this. And ask yourself this question. If Hamas had Israel's firepower, since Hamas is trying to target and kill civilians and has the annihilation of Israel as one of its goals, how many dead Israelis would there be if it was up to Hamas? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's talk about it. We'll be right back.
fire we
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. Again, I'm putting out a question for Israel's critics. I want to give you an opportunity to air your solution. What should Israel do? Israel accepted the ceasefire proposal put forward by Egypt. Hamas did not. They responded with more rocket attacks. They are responding with rocket attacks from neighborhoods. They are responding from rocket attacks in schoolyards next to children, and on and on. What would you like Israel to do? 866-34-TRUTH. One Christian gentleman on Twitter said all war is wrong. Israel just needs to turn the other cheek. Well, Jesus was not instituting this as national military policy in the Sermon on the Mount. He was talking about personal conduct. He was talking about non-retaliation and not seeking personal vindication. He was not saying if someone breaks into your home and they're there to rape and kill your wife and children, he was not saying, say to them, oh, yeah, great. Here's the bedroom to where the kids are. I'll look the other way while you slaughter my family. No, he wasn't saying that. And in fact, Romans 13 talks about secular governments and how they bear the sword to punish evil doers. So what would you like Israel to do? This is a terrible moral quandary. Everyone is grieved over the death of civilians. But in fact, Joey, clip number seven. I want you to go to clip number seven. I look at the Palestinians as the greatest victims of Hamas. Yes, there have been deaths in Israel and harassing of the Israelis and psychological torment and so on for years with constant rockets and bombs. And remember, Israelis are finding tunnel after tunnel after tunnel. Think of this. Somebody lives across the street from you and you've had to put up a big, big, big security fence to keep them away. And you've got this big guard dog outside because they keep trying to attack your family. Now you discover that they're digging tunnels under the ground to come up right in your house, right under your bedroom. What are you supposed to do? 866-348-7884. Despite all this, though, I say that the greatest victims of all are the Palestinian people raised under radical Islam. Listen to clip number seven, and then I'll tell you what it's about.
فزيادك مجد وفخار حين مضيت استشهادية فزيادك مجد وفخار حين مضيت استشهادية
It's obviously the voice of children singing. They appear to be no older than 10, according to Times of Israel reporting on this. These are children in Gaza singing the praises of suicide bombers. This is a year old. So this is not even in the midst of this conflict. This is the mentality. This is what these kids are raised in. And I'll talk to you about some of the goals of Hamas in a moment. In fact, before I go to the phones, and phone lines are jammed, as far as it seems, mainly folks calling in who are sympathetic to Israel's situation, but honestly, truly, I want to hear from you if you feel that Israel is acting wrongly. I'd like you to tell me what Israel should do. But my friend Avner Boesky, reporting from Israel, points out some of the philosophy of Hamas, either in their original charter or in statements that have been made over the years. Hamas Charter Article 13, there is no solution to the Palestinian problem except by jihad. Article 15, I indeed wish to go to war for the sake of Allah. I will assault and kill, assault and kill, assault and kill. This is the Hamas charter. The key to destroying the Jewish state of Israel involves terror attacks, which will strike fear and defeatism in the heart of Hamas's enemies, part of the philosophy. Hamas co-founder Mahmoud al-Zahar says that the attacks are designed to stampede a mass immigration from Israel and to disrupt the daily life of its citizens. Which do you think is more effective, martyrdom operations or rockets against Sderot? Rockets against Sderot. This is the closest Israeli village to Gaza. Rockets against Sderot will cause mass migration, greatly disrupt daily lives and government administration, and can make a much huger impact on the government. We're using the methods that convince the Israelis that their occupation, meaning having a homeland, is costing them too much. We are succeeding with the rockets. We have no losses, and the impact on the Israeli side is so much. This is what Israel is dealing with. One more quote before we go to the phones, 866-348-7884. Joey, let's go to numbers 5 and 6. Russell Brand is a British comedian, and he and others have been tweeting out free Palestine. So listen to what he has to say about Israel and about right and wrong here. Let's start at clip number 5.
You know how you have to look at the statistics sometimes? Like, I think there's been like 230 civilian deaths for Palestinians and only one Israeli death.
With the powerful lies the obligation. In any situation where there's an imbalance of power, the ones with the most power can have the most impact. The United States, if they're in a conflict with Vietnam, they've got more power. So they've got more power to make the situation worse, more power to make the situation better. So seemingly, militarily at least, Israel are more powerful in this situation.
Ah, all right. So they are more powerful. Think of this. Think if Israel wanted to attack and destroy the people of Gaza. If Israel wanted to kill civilians, they could kill not hundreds, but hundreds of thousands. They just bomb, go all over the place, just bomb everybody. If Hamas had the power to do what Israel's doing, they would inflict casualties and kill hundreds of thousands and millions of Israelis if they had the power. So Israel, sir, Mr. Brand, is using remarkable restraint. And by the way, one of their most elite military units, the Golani Brigade, lost 13 people, others in critical condition, in warfare on Sunday. Does that make you feel better, Mr. Brand? Perhaps Israel, with its power, is seeking to protect its people from terrorists out to destroy and kill. Free Palestine poster says, join us to protest against the Israeli onslaught and massacre in Gaza. How about protesting to Hamas? How about telling them, lay down your weapons? How about telling them, live peacefully with your Israeli neighbors and things will go well with you? How about telling them, renounce your determination to destroy Israel, recognize the Jewish homeland, you can live side by side peacefully, just like the 1.5 million Arabs living within the state of Israel live peacefully and prosperously and freely, and quit endangering your children and your women and your unarmed men by putting them in the path of danger. So to the critics of Israel, I ask you again, what would you like Israel to do? Yeah, it's one thing to tweet out ugly, nasty messages to me or to post nasty messages on Facebook and to damn all of us to hell in the name of Allah and use profanity and other things. But surely some of you are not coming with that level of venom. Surely some of you are criticizing Israel, have some constructive things to say. I'm eager to hear them. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Manassas, Virginia. Tony, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing well, thank you, sir.
You know what where this really starts is, see, Hamas, they want to be a state in Gaza and West Bank, and because Israel don't want them to be there, this was the excuse to attack Israel. To go kill 3 of Israeli students and then wait for Israel to strike somebody. So when their little Palestinian teenagers got killed, oh, that's their excuse to attack Israel? You know, here it is. They're in the U.S. over at the White House protesting against Israel. Why don't they protest against their own president over there in Gaza and tell him to stop and leave Israel alone? That's what's wrong with the rest of the world. They want to keep attacking and downgrading Israel. Leave Israel alone. And maybe there will be peace.
Yeah. Otherwise, and you know, and let me just say this, Tony, because I've got a break, but thank you for weighing in clearly. Look, the basic philosophy is that the Jewish people do not belong there, Tony, that they cannot have a homeland there, that they must get out. That is the goal of Hamas. No recognition of a Jewish state or Jewish homeland in the Middle East. Otherwise, for sure, if they said we've had a change of heart, we recognize the error of our ways, we have grievances with Israel, yes, but we recognize that this approach is wrong, let's live peacefully. Israel has proven itself over the years, even to give up more land than it ought to, unwisely. For example, even the withdrawal from Gaza seems unwise at this point. And many felt it was unwise the whole time. And the standard of living of the Palestinians in Gaza would skyrocket. As it is, most of the money is funneled into the hands of leaders and into the warfare activity, from what I understand. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I see the Palestinian argument. They have a legitimate gripe. What I don't see is the argument from so much of the rest of the world that they also have the moral high ground. I see on the news every night lots of reports, and it's very sad, we all feel horrible about them, of Palestinian civilians who are dying, including children. Nobody seems to ask, whose fault is that mostly?
This is the second time in the last couple of months that I have quoted Bill Maher in agreement. The other day he was talking about gay mafia. Here he's talking about the imbalanced reporting or assessment of Israel's war with Hamas. Michael Brown, welcome back to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I do have a question for Israel's critics. In light of the murderous actions and intentions of Hamas, what would you like Israel to do? To read my article with that title, A Question for Israel's Critics, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest article. I also wrote another article that's out today, The Danger of an Exaggerated End Time Mentality. And I'll talk about that very briefly in a moment. Let's go back to the phones. Kevin in Waldorf, Maryland, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing well, thank you.
Hey, I just think that really, if you think about it, if there was a country to our north and to our south that lobbed a certain amount of missiles over a span of time, I think that we would respond in a great way and not just let it happen. And I don't think the world would say much about it either, us defending ourselves. So I think it's ridiculous that that they wouldn't even propose something that, Israel will back down. They're defending their people. They have every right to 100-something bombs a day being lobbed over to those guys. I think they're, and again, their restraint to me, anybody else would have reacted. If you did this to Russia, if you did it to any of the other leading countries, China, I think they would respond as well. So I think it's ridiculous to expect them to back down.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin, for the clarity. And look, remember, right now, the people of Israel are in mourning. They're in agony over the loss of their own people, just as Palestinians are in agony. But this is not something that Israel does lightly. Israel knows that world opinion quickly turns against it. Israel knows that there's hypocrisy in world reporting and moral equivalency in terms of dealing with Israel and its enemies. They understand that. It's obviously extraordinarily costly for them to do this and everything. I mean, tourism is a major part of their economy, and then the war effort has to be terribly draining. But worst of all, they're calling people up from reserves and now reserves, family men dying, young people dying. So it's not like Israel's just sitting back laughing. This is agony for Israel, nor is Israel laughing when there are civilian casualties in Gaza. Thank you, Kevin, for weighing in. By the way, even reports from Al Jazeera that I have seen where they are charting what's going on, if you look at all of the different groups, male, female, under 10 years old, this age, this age, this age. The largest group of Palestinian casualties in Gaza, by far the largest group, is men 18 to 28 years old. In other words, combatants. Yet their loss is also tragic. They are people created in God's image for whom Jesus died and now presumably lost without him. That's tragic. But please understand that the vast majority of those dying are combatants. And if the combatants were not trying to fight from civilian neighborhoods and in the proximity of hospitals and schools and people's homes, then you would not see this many Palestinian casualties. But again, please, for a critic, tell me what you'd like Israel to do. Okay, before I go back to the phones, over the weekend I was thinking, okay, what could we get in your hands that would be most helpful? And how could I, with that, encourage you to partner with us? Because we are in the front lines. We are reporting on these issues. I'm researching. I'm putting out articles. We're using the radio broadcast to speak the truth. We're using social media to speak the truth and to call for all involved on both sides of the conflict. And at the same time, to reach out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel with the good news of Jesus, the Messiah. So I've got a set of three DVDs for you. My lecture at University of South Florida is Israel, an Evil Occupier, a super important lecture that will give you the history right up until today, eye-opening. And then my debate with my friend James Michael Smith at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary on Israel. Who is Israel? Is Israel the church? And what about end times in Israel? And what about ethics in Israel today? And then my radio debate is actually by Skype with Dr. Don Preston on Israel's future, and are the promises to Israel past or still future? So three DVDs, $25 postage paid, great tools. They'll be of great help. It's also great savings off the retail price, $25 postage paid, and it gives you an opportunity to sow into us. I'm sure you can watch some of these on YouTube, but you get high quality DVD, and it gives you an opportunity to partner with us. But if you feel prompted to help us with more on the front lines of this spiritual warfare effort, as we stand with Israel and pray for the Palestinians, an additional gift will go right into the cause. So give us a call, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, and stand with us. Take advantage of these important resources. Let's go back to the phones. Queens, New York. Eric, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, fair story. I got to tell you this, you can't make this up. I'm from a sleepy little place from Amishtown, Pennsylvania. That's Lancaster. I'm with my kids yesterday fishing on a tiny little pond, and out of nowhere, a huge tourist bus pulls up behind us, about 50 people speaking a different language. I said, where are you guys from? And they start shouting, Israel, Israel. I said, I can't believe this. And with that, talk about led by the Spirit. I turn around, I raise my voice, I raise my hands, and I tell them all, I said, I need you to know this. There are many Americans that love you, believe in you. Now go defend yourself. This crowd bursted out into cheers, waving hands. One lady started crying. I got to tell you, Dr. Brett, it's amazing to see how these people just need our love and support. It's amazing.
And Eric, where did this happen?
In Lancaster, Pennsylvania, a little town of Leola, Pennsylvania.
Isn't that wild? Isn't that absolutely wild?
I was like, there's a tour bus full of Israelis doing here, and they poured out, they listened, and I tell you, led by the Spirit, I said, we love you. Many Americans love you. Please know that. Go defend yourself. And they went bonkers.
Wow. Hey, Eric, that was a divine appointment. Right man at the right place at the right time. And thanks for being obedient. You could have just smiled and waved, but thank you for doing what you did and sending that word of encouragement to a people that often feels it's all alone. Thank you, Eric. And friends, it is the love of believing Christians, standing with Israel, praying for the well-being of the Palestinians as well, that has brought great encouragement to the people of Israel. And friends, there's a lot of pain in the world. You read the stories of the kids that were killed on the Malaysian airline that were shot down over Ukraine, and a lot of pain in the world. Let's remember, we can look to the God of all comfort. We can look to the one, Jesus, who has all authority, and we can pray for his return in the end of all pain.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, before we go to the phones, as I have a question for Israel's critics, and honestly, I want to hear from you. If you feel that what Israel is doing is wrong, if you feel they're guilty of genocide, if you feel that they are the cause of the problem with Hamas in the Middle East, honestly, I want to hear from you. Now we may have a passionate difference of opinion. We might. And I might challenge you just like you challenge me. Or you may raise something that gets us all to think. But honestly, I want to hear from those who differ. Don't just sit there and grind your teeth. And don't just post angry notes on Facebook and social media and other places. Here's your opportunity to say it on my airtime. All right? So thus far, all the calls have either been, as I'm looking at our screen, neutral or pro-Israel. And I will take everyone that's on hold. I'm going to do my best to get to you shortly. But really, I'd love to hear from someone who differs with me. 866-348-7884. And one clip, this was John Kerry. There was an off the mic, comma, a live mic. He didn't realize he was a live mic. He's obviously busy. He's talking to staff. He's talking about going back over to the Middle East and trying to broker a ceasefire. But of course, Israel is doing its best to engage in pinpoint operations. Okay, here's where the rocket launcher is. Here's where the terrorists are. Bomb there. Here's a house next door. Don't touch that house. Listen to what happens. Clip number one.
Yeah. It's a pinpoint operation. It's a pinpoint operation. Thank you, John. I think, John, we ought to go tonight. I think it's crazy to be sitting around.
All right, so he's talking to an advisor there, and he didn't recognize, allegedly, that he was on a live mic, in which he said it's a heck of, almost that word, of a pinpoint operation. Like, oh, yeah, really, they're killing all these civilians. So, of course, he gets challenged about that. Directly, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Ian in Providence, Rhode Island. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thanks for letting me on. I've always just wondered why there's a group inside Christianity that believes that God is going to keep his promises to Israel through the church now. And Israel, the promises to Israel are not for Jews anymore. But I've always wondered why people would think that when there's so much satanic energy focused to the Jewish people, from Esther and Haman to all, you know, Adolf Hitler, now Hamas, and I've left a bunch out. Why is there people that want to completely annihilate the Jewish people if God is not going to keep the promises that he made to those people? And I think it's clear that he will, and that's why.
Of course, Ian, it's great spiritual logic. I once asked a group of black Hebrews in New York City, a militant sect. They were
thinking about them, too.
Yeah. They were preaching in the street corner of New York City, and I confronted them with truth. I didn't calculate properly because I happened to be the only white person in the crowd. And when we were done, they started shouting "Death to America, death to the white man." So it wasn't a calculated move. But I would have done it anyway because I felt God wanted me to. But I said to them, if the Jewish people, they are not Jews, because that was their bigger issue, why did Hitler try to kill them? He said, "Oh no, Hitler knew they weren't Jews either." But you know what it's like. It's like in a football game, if you've ever seen the rare play where a guy makes a play and starts running in the wrong direction, and instead of running into the opponent's end zone, he's running into his own end zone, none of the opponents try to tackle him because he's going the wrong direction. But if he's trying to score in the closing seconds and he's going to win the game, man, those opponents are going to do everything they can to tackle him. So why, in that sense, is the world trying to kill Israel? Why all the commotion if there are no promises that remain for Israel? Simple spiritual logic, Ian. Right on. We'll be right back.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Still eager to hear from those who'd like to answer my question. I'm going to go back to the phones in a moment. My question for Israel's critics, again, to state it as simply as I can, and here's how I end my article entitled The Question for Israel's Critics. Since 70% of the people of Israel have had to take refuge in bomb shelters in response to sirens, and given the fact that Hamas has sworn to Israel's destruction, what would you like Israel to do? A Muslim leader in Lebanon addressed Prime Minister Netanyahu, obviously not directly, but through the media the other day, and said, "We will give the skulls of your midgets as gifts for our children's feet to play with." In November of 2012, after a Hamas bomb wounded 22 Israelis in Tel Aviv, and the picture of the destruction was airing on Hamas-run Al-Aqsa TV, the announcer said, "These are scenes of the casualties. God willing, we will soon see black body bags. I pray to God the Exalted, we will see body bags in a short while. Right now, in these moments, the mosques in the Gaza Strip, their minarets are loudly sounding cries of Allahu Akbar and cries of joy, and the residents of Gaza Strip are bowing down to Allah for this offering. The morale of the Gaza residents is in the sky right now and is rising just as the rockets of resistance." So when that's the mentality, the Jewish blood being shed, then how is Israel supposed to deal with this dangerous neighbor? Let's just listen to Chris Wallace interviewing Secretary of State John Kerry on Fox News. Joey, we'll go to clip number 3. And Chris Wallace is asking him about his off-the-camera remark criticizing Israel's operation on some level. Clip number 3.
Secretary Kerry, when you said it's a pinpoint operation, are you upset that the Israelis are going too far? And in fact, do you intend to go back to the Middle East tonight, sir?
I think it's very, very difficult in these situations. Obviously very difficult, Chris. You have people who've come out of tunnels. You have a right to go in and take out those tunnels. We completely support that. And we support Israel's right to defend itself against rockets that are, continuing to come in. Hamas has started this process of rocketing after Israel was trying to find the people who killed 3 young, and 1 American kid, 3 young Israeli citizens. It's disgraceful. And so, yeah, it's tough. It's tough to have this operation. And I reacted, obviously, in a way that, anybody does with respect to, young children and civilians.
Yeah, so he reacted in a way that others would react when you hear the news. How? By blaming Israel. Again, my question for Israel's critics, what should Israel do differently? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Queens, New York. Charlotte, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Hi, Mr. Brown. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Yes, good. I am really upset. This really got my dander up because, it's no use that what you're dealing with here is a psychopathic bully, okay? Somebody tells you, ceasefire, let's get along, No. I wouldn't even talk religion with these people because that's what they're basing it all on, okay, on this religion of theirs. And Jesus was never for religion, okay? Religions only bring wars and separations and fights, okay? I'm for the person. If you're hurting their home, I think Israel should fight with all their might because you've got to protect your home. You have got to protect your home. You cannot do this. They wouldn't let anybody get it. They're even jumping in the streets, death to this, death to that, right? So I'm airing my opinion. Israel should fight and defend their homes. Anybody that would be attacked like they have would have to do that,
okay, would have to do that. It's not because of, oh, we're going to be pro this and pro that or against this or that. Have a brain. Where's the brain? Where's the mind? There's no mind here. This is like an animal just going out there to kill for blood, okay, because they've got some quirk in their head, okay? So I had to say my two cents. I'm very sorry, but that's how I feel.
No, Charlotte, that's why the phone lines are open, and thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it. Look, this is why I say that the Palestinians are the greatest victims of Hamas, the greatest victims of poor leadership. There's a book that I highly recommend. Of course, folks on the other side of the issue differ, but it's by Middle Eastern scholar Ephraim Karsh. It's called Palestine Betrayed. I get into some of the quotes from Professor Karsh in my lecture, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? I'll tell you how you can get that on DVD a little bit later. But Professor Karsh really lays out that the Palestinians have suffered at the hands of bad decisions by their leaders. 1947, when the two-state solution is offered, that wasn't necessarily called that, but partition plan back then, the surrounding Arab nations said no. They said no on behalf of the Arabs. Remember, there was no such thing as a Palestinian people, so you didn't have Palestinian leadership. You had the surrounding nations. No, we'll drive Israel into the sea. Well, it didn't work. You said, well, why agree to something that they get land that was originally yours? Because there's plenty of room in the land, and Israel's presence greatly developed and enhanced the economy. And those that stayed, the Arabs that stayed and lived in Israel, undeniably went from 200,000 to over 1.5 million. With complete freedom, and the vast majority of them, even if they are siding with the Palestinians emotionally in this conflict, the vast majority do not want to be under the Palestinian Authority or Hamas. Absolutely. So then, the Six-Day War in 1967, what does the Arab League say? No, no, no. There are three no's. No, we're not going to negotiate with Israel. We're not going to recognize Israel. No peace with Israel. So once again, if Hamas would change its intent, look, the people, as devoted as they are, and some fanatical, every people group is going to have fanatics. Still, if the leadership said, okay, the fact of the matter is, it is Allah's will that we live in peace with our neighbors and stop the bloodshed. Wasn't it Golda Meir who said to Anwar Sadat, that when you love your children more than you hate us, we'll have peace. So if they said, look, we don't want the bloodshed, we have enough shaheeds, we have enough martyrs, we don't want the bloodshed, let's live in peace with our neighbor, and it was genuine, and Israel saw there was a laying down of weapons, you said, well, then Israel just come in and slaughter them. No, they wouldn't. That's not what Israel would do. You may have a fanatic in Israel that would try to do that in these crazy young people or whoever they were responsible for the kidnap, brutal kidnap and murder of the Palestinian boy, the 16-year-old boy. Yeah, you do have crazies on every side, but it is Judaism as a whole does not have that mentality, and the people of Israel as a whole do not have that mentality. And they, listen, the War of Independence, 1947, 1948, cost Israel about 1% of its population. And this is right after the Holocaust. Israelis would gladly live in peace if they had peace-loving neighbors, and the standard of living of the people of Gaza would increase massively. That's a fact. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Washington, D.C. Bernard, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, how are you?
Doing very well. Thank you, sir.
Let me ask you a question. How does one live in peace with a group of people who would keep you in a perpetual state of apartheid slavery? Okay, these people...
That's a great question theoretically, but please explain the application, okay?
Well, the application is that you have a system of nothing but apartheid over there. They have no intention of... The Israeli people have no intention of having peace, sharing the land.
Hang on.
Wait a minute. Let me have my...
I'm just trying to clarify. There are 1.5 million Palestinians who live in Israel, with complete freedom.
But hang on,
you made an apartheid. I got plenty of time. I'm going to keep you on after the break, so you'll get to say your piece. I don't know how many years you've lived in Israel, but there are 1.5 million Palestinians who live in Israel, who vote, who have representatives in the parliament, who have
what
a representative on the Supreme
Court. What about the 6 million who were driven out who they won't allow to return?
6 million who were driven out? What are you talking about? 6 million who were driven out?
You know that there were millions of, you know that that's part of.
There
the
were
Jewish
not millions, sir. There were 600,000. Sir, there were 600,000, and Israel said, stay, don't leave, stay, we are your neighbors. The Arabs said, leave, and we will drive Israel into the sea. And when that failed, now they were refugees. And did the Arabs repatriate them? No. They said, you will stay refugees. But back to you on the other side of the break. You got 2 minutes to check your facts.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I want to continue my conversation with Bernard. I jumped in because we had a break. So here's what happens historically. 1947, the UN offers the Arabs and the Jews a two-state solution. The Jews say yes. The Jews say yes. And in fact, they issue statements, you are our neighbors, there's room in the land for both of us. David Ben-Gurion, Golda Meir, others. The Arab leaders say, no, we will destroy the Jews. The Arab leaders tell their people, leave, flee, because a canon cannot distinguish between a Jew and an Arab. Jewish leadership on radio and leaflets says, stay, you are our neighbors. Oh, sure, there's some warfare going on. Okay, what happens? When war breaks out, who starts it? Five surrounding Arab nations attack Israel to try to drive the Jews into the sea. Jews have to flee from all the surrounding Muslim lands. 800,000 Jews flee. What does Israel do? Israel incorporates them into its infant state. 600,000 Arabs flee, 200,000 stay. The 200 that stayed live in full freedom in Israel, 1.5 million strong. They are in the parliament. They are on the Supreme Court. They have complete religious and political freedom more than any other peoples in any surrounding Arab or Muslim nation. Now, what happens to the 600,000 refugees that flee? Do the surrounding Arab nations take them in as Jews were taken into Israel? No. In fact, there are refugee camps in places like Lebanon and Syria, Palestinian refugee camps and Arab nations. Why? Because it is all designed to hurt Israel and not help the Palestinians who are the ultimate victims. So, Bernard, that's my recap of history. Please give me a more accurate version if you think mine is wrong.
Have you unmuted me now?
You go for it, sir.
Okay, you know, you mute me and then you give your little propaganda spiel. But still, how is it that you can live? How can you live in peace with someone who says, okay, this is your land over here, this is my land, and then you use your army to encroach and build settlements on my land that you supposedly have given me, which was mine all along? Okay, every time they say they want peace, they encroach upon the peace. And then they incite people to attack them so that people like you can point and say, oh, see, they're no good, they're terrorists. But if you were living in your house, on your street, and somebody you don't know comes in and says, well, I'm taking your living room and your basement because it was promised to me in the Bible somewhere, and then they're going to go in your refrigerator and take your food and all of that, and they're going to kill your children, then you would fight them back too. And since you don't have all of the weapons that the United States taxpayer provides, then you would use whatever you had at your disposal. And for that, you're going to call me a terrorist. You talked about a pinpoint attack. The only pinpoint that we saw evidence of was when they pinpointed the children running on the beach and killed them in cold blood. What are you talking about?
So it's all the Jews. I mean, the Jews are pretty bad people, I guess.
I'm not saying that the Jews are pretty bad people. I'm saying that man's inhumanity to man is what we see on this.
But
plate.
Bernard, do you realize? Hey, I let you talk freely. But do you? And I put you on mute
because we had
a break. But Bernard, do you realize that all you've done is 100% repeat lies against Israel? Israel did not take anybody's land. Jews and Arabs were living.
These are not lies.
Jews and Arabs were living.
They saw it on television when they bombed those children. They bombed those children. That was a pinpoint strike.
It was a mistake. It was a mistake that Israel, Bernard, it was a mistake, and Israel is investigating it. All the reason civilian. Bernard, what? Bernard, it's a mistake. Right now, Israel is under siege day and night. Do you care about that? Nope. Do you care about the fact that Hamas has launched thousands of rockets against Israel and has refused ceasefire? Do you care about that? Nope. Do you care about the fact that Hamas launches rockets from playgrounds and hospitals to kill Jews? Nope. Do you care about the fact that the Israelis were kidnapped and murdered in cold blood? Nope. Bernard.
They have planes and missiles. Okay, I guess I've been muted.
It's their fault. Bernard, you haven't been muted. It's their fault, sir. It's their fault that they have weaponry to protect themselves against people who are sworn to their destruction day and night.
When you have that advantage of weaponry, then it is incumbent upon you. You have the moral responsibility to bring about peace in a way that is peaceful.
And if the people, if your neighbor wants to kill you, if your neighbor wants to kill you,
on the block.
So if your neighbor every night is breaking into your home with a knife and is every night stabbing your kids, but you have a big gun, you shouldn't shoot the gun. You don't keep stabbing your kids.
What about people keeping you behind a Nazi wall? They built a Nazi wall.
Bernard, you are listening. Bernard, you are full of propaganda and lies and misinformation. Israel built a fence.
The Mossad, they are worse than the Gestapo, what they do to the people over there who are defenseless, because they have not the weaponry.
There you go, sir. I was just waiting to get to the heart of some of the Jew hatred that's actually there. Look, the fact is, sir, and it is me talking because we're almost out of time, you are listening to lies. There is no Nazi wall. There is a security barrier to keep murderers out. They built a fence. It's 97% fence and 3% wall to keep murderers out. And it has succeeded. But I guess with the imbalance of power, you'd be happier if the murderers got in. Sir, I appreciate your passion. And I am concerned about every casualty, Palestinian, Jewish, period. In point of fact, though, you have been brainwashed by lies. They are lies. And the more you talk, the uglier those lies become. And the more lies you are going to believe. If you'd like, I would gladly send you a resource, a lecture, if you watch it. And then after you watch it, you can call in and give your impression. If you'd like it, Dwight will come on the phone and we'll give it to you. It's called Is Israel an Evil Occupier? Or go to my YouTube channel and search for Is Israel an Apartheid State? I appreciate you weighing in, sir. Stay right there if you'd like the free resource. But I'm telling you, you have believed lies. 1.5 million Palestinians live happily within Israel, safely protected by the government. Why? Because they're not trying to murder the Jews. It's really simple. All right, friends, this really does underscore the importance of these three resources I want to get into your hands. Three very, very important resources. The lecture is Israel, an Evil Occupier. It addresses so many of the lies that we just heard spouted there by Bernard, along with two debates on who is Israel and Israel's future and ethics in Israel today. $25 postage paid for all together. But if you can help with an additional gift, that would be awesome, as we really are on the front line standing for truth right here. Call now 1-800-278-9978. Very timely resources. Super important. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, there is a lot of emotion. There is a lot of propaganda. There are a lot of lies circulating. How about we calm our hearts, go before the Lord, and say, Lord, show me the truth.
where it leads.
Well, I've got a serious question for the critics of Israel and a word of encouragement in the midst of a world in a lot of pain right now.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it's not every day that a caller tells me that the Israeli Mossad is worse than the Gestapo, that the Israelis built a Nazi wall, that they're practicing apartheid and pinpointing civilians to slaughter them. But that's what my last caller had to say. Perhaps we'll pull that out and put it up on YouTube as a clip that everyone can listen to. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Please, if you are a critic of Israel, please tell me what Israel should do. We hear people talking about their military might. We hear people talking about the fact that they have military superiority over Hamas. We understand that. Can I tell you something? If the tables were turned. Yes. Every situation involving casualties is tragic. Soldiers who die in war, that's a tragic loss of life, even though in many cases it's a noble loss of life. For civilians, unarmed civilians, non-combatants who die, that's even more tragic because they're not choosing to be in the war and they can't defend themselves. So when we hear of several hundred Palestinians killed, among them civilians, that's heartbreaking. Pictures of children, of unarmed women, that's sickening, that's heartbreaking. Israeli casualties, sickening, heartbreaking. My point is, though, that if the tables were turned and Hamas had the ability to have Israel's firepower, you'd be talking about hundreds of thousands of casualties. And flip it around. Yeah, we'll go to clip 15 in a moment. If you turn this around the other way, think of this. If Israel wanted to kill civilians with all of its firepower, Gaza in many parts is densely populated, then it would not be hard for Israel to commit absolute horrific crimes of slaughtering hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. The fact that the number is what it is only because Israel is doing its best to protect civilians. So my question again, I'll put it out here one more hour, 866-34-TRUTH. What would you like Israel to do? What should Israel do differently? And again, I find myself in the unusual position of agreeing with Bill Maher. This is what he had to say about the situation.
If the Hamas people had the opportunity, they would kill the maximum number of Israelis, which would be all. And Israel has the opportunity to kill way more, and they do not.
No.
It seems like they are the victim of the soft bigotry of high expectations.
Ah, the soft bigotry of high expectations. Hey, one more clip. Let's play clip number 14, again from Bill Maher. This is now twice in a few weeks that I've actually agreed with him. I'm sure it doesn't make his day, but I'm just stating something interesting. Clip number 14.
I feel terrible for a Palestinian child who dies, but if it's your father, your brother, your uncle who is firing those rockets into Israel, whose fault is it really? Do you really expect the Israelis not to retaliate?
Yeah, exactly. Please read my article, A Question for Israel's Critics, 866-34-TRUTH. To read the article, go to AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article there. We've got some very special and timely resources for you that we are making available, 866-348-7884.
Shake
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, we remain on the front lines of Israel right now. Although not physically there, but spiritually speaking, we continue to focus on what is happening in Israel and the Middle East. And my phone lines are open. We were flooded with calls in the first hour, and it was only right towards the end that we got a really hostile call. Caller accusing Israel of an apartheid state, building a Nazi wall, the Mossad being worse than the Gestapo. But the good thing is that at least we were able to expose some of the propaganda and wrong thinking that is out there. That being said, I am perfectly happy to talk to you and talk through differences. We had plenty of people standing with Israel and standing for Israel and saying why we should be standing with Israel, but I'm open to hear from others with a different perspective. 866-348-7884. Let's just talk history for a moment. And this is a few years back. Joey, let's start clip number eight. A few years back, Palestinian spokeswoman Hanan Ashrawi, she was on Zola Levitt. Zola visited Ramallah and is asking her about the history of the Palestinian people. Another of the myths that is out there. Let's go to clip number eight.
What is the real history of the Palestinian people in this land?
Well, we go back centuries. Actually, if you want, we go back to the Canaanites.
To the Canaanites?
Yes. Okay. So the Palestinians are the longest standing, ongoing, historical human tradition in Palestine. Of course, we are also a mix of so many tribes that came into Palestine. But those of us, my family has been here for centuries. Most people trace their families, centuries and thousands of years.
I'm sorry to have a little bit of incredulity there. Most people, speaking of most Palestinians, trace their family origins in the land centuries and thousands of years. That is complete hogwash. That is complete nonsense. Is it possible that there are those who would be descendants of the Canaanites who have lived in the land in an ongoing presence? They would have lived subjugated to Israel, but then lived in an ongoing presence and are the Palestinian people today, and they go all the way back to the Canaanites. If such an individual exists or such a group of individuals exists, it would be an archaeological, historical, sociological, demographic wonder. To put it mildly, we do know fairly well where people have come from, and the vast majority of those who would identify as Palestinians living in the land today, the vast majority have come within the last couple of centuries. Many of them came in the late 1800s as there was an increase of Jews coming back to their homeland, to their ancient homeland, and there had always been a Jewish presence, even if it was a minority presence, in the land through the centuries. But, think of this now. The Palestinian presence, or just the Arab presence that would have been known, increased as the Jewish presence increased, one reason being Jewish development of the land and prosperity coming, so more Arabs came back to the land. But there has not been a historic Palestinian movement for the Arab people to be back to their homeland because it was never the ancient homeland. So here, a simple illustration of this historical fact. This does not minimize suffering today in any way. It simply points to history. As I said the first hour, I want to repeat it. The ultimate victims of Hamas are the Palestinian people. Yes, the Israelis are suffering because of Hamas, but the ultimate victims are the Palestinian people. And they have been victims of bad decisions by their leaders for many decades now. So in 1947, when the UN came up with the partition plan for Israel to have part of the land and for the Palestinians to have the other part of the land, simple question for you. What was the Palestinian government that made a decision? Who were the leaders of the Palestinian government of the state of Palestine who made a decision? There was no such thing. There were Arab leaders who made a joint decision, but there was no Palestinian state that existed with a Palestinian government, and this is the Palestinian leadership. Why? Because there had not been a move for statehood. It was the Jews who were saying every year, this next time, next year in Jerusalem, praying for the return and longing for the return to their homeland. It's quite a difference. So Hanan Ashrari, it's just complete myth. And by the way, the name Palestine does not mean that there were Philistines living in the land, and Philistines were not Canaanites. The Philistines were non-Semitic peoples. They were sea peoples. They were Aegean sea peoples that had made their way over to the land and then took up residence there. But they were not Semitic people-speaking peoples. So they're not ancient Semites going back to the earlier history of the land. They are not Canaanites. So after the second Jewish revolt from 132 to 135 and the decisive defeat, after great warfare, the decisive defeat of Jewish people and great scattering of Jewish people and even banning from Jerusalem, the Roman Empire renamed the land Palestine, using the name of Israel's enemy, the Philistines. But the Philistines were basically an extinct people at that point. So anyway, clip number 9, and let's listen again, Zola Levitt speaking. This is some years ago. Of course, Zola's with the Lord now. Speaking with Palestinian spokeswoman Hanan Ashrawi.
And it's amazing for people to tell us you're an accident of history, or this land, that's your land where we define our being, our culture, our history, our sense of value from being the people of the land, and then we are told, no, well, this land has to be given away in accordance with the Bible or something. If you reorganize the world in accordance with the Bible, you'll be in serious trouble.
Well, first, God is the one ultimately who organizes the world. I mean, human beings make decisions. But if God, in fact, has regathered the Jewish people who have been scattered, if God, in fact, has done that, then it's God who is ordering boundaries. We are simply asking God, what are you doing? And looking at Scripture for guidance. And then in all cases, looking for justice. Now, let's go further. There's no one saying to the Arabs living in the land, you can't stay. In fact, those that did stay, and I'll repeat this yet again, those that did stay in Israel, 200,000, are now over 1.5 million. All right, so the Jewish-Israeli population, about 6 million. The Palestinian population living within Israel proper, 1.5 million. They have more freedoms under the Israeli government than any other Arabs living in any surrounding state or under any Muslim government. They can freely change religion. They can freely speak out against the government. If they did things under Hamas, under the Palestinian Authority, under Jordanian leadership, under Saudi Arabian leadership, under Egyptian leadership, under Syrian leadership, under Lebanon leadership, if they spoke out against their countries the way they speak out against Israel, as Israeli citizens protected by the government, they'd be in big trouble, to put it lightly. So, once again, no one said anybody had to leave. Everyone could have lived together. There could have been some reorganization of the land, but everyone could have lived together. Oh, a little bit more, and then we'll go to the phones. Clip number 10, again, Zola Levitt asking now, what's the history of Jews in the land? He's speaking, this is some years back, in Ramallah, with Palestinian spokeswoman Hanan Ashrawi.
What is the history of the Jews in the land? Because they would hold that the Jews have been here since the Canaanites as well.
Oh, the Jews came and went in many ways, and they were part of the pluralism and the diversity of this culture. Of course, there were many Jews who stayed, but it hasn't been a Jewish state, so to speak. It's been an Arab state for centuries.
Well, what was the name of that Arab state, with all respect? What was the name of the government of that Arab state? Oh, it was under Islamic Caliphate for a while. It was under Ottoman rule. It was under Crusader rule. It's been inhabited by many, many different peoples. But what was the indigenous Arab state? You know, it's interesting. The Jerusalem Post, when it was first published, Jewish-owned, Jewish-operated, you know what it was called? It was called the Palestine Post. And there was a Palestine orchestra. It's a Jewish orchestra. Because Jews identify as Palestinians, too. So what was the name of the Arab state prior to 1947? I'm just curious to know that. Yeah, I'm being sarcastic. There was none. Back to the phones when we come back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. One more time, because I'm going to switch subjects at the top of the hour. One more time. If you are a critic of Israel, feel Israel is doing the wrong thing, as I've received some angry tweets and posts over the course of the last few days, tell me what Israel should do differently. And please read my article, A Question for Israel's Critics. It's listed under latest article on AskDrBrown.org. And we've got some very important, timely resources to make available to you as well. Let's go over to Columbia, Kentucky. John, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thanks, Dr. Brown. I appreciate you taking my call.
You bet.
And I wanted, in regards to these issues that you're talking about, and I really appreciate your ministry, especially historical and linguistic language ministries that you've done and your expertise in Semitic languages. I wanted to point to the book of Joshua, the first chapter of the Bible, which the Jews would hold to and Christians would hold to. And God tells Moses in verse 2, says, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, as I said to Moses. So here, the God of the universe, the creator of the universe, has given a land that was promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, given a land to the Jewish people that came out of Egypt. And he's the one that's given the authority for them to be there. And this happened, I don't know, you could probably correct my understanding how long ago it was, but then this setting up the Davidic kingdom and all the history since then, thousands of years. And if my understanding is, historical understanding about Islam is correct, then in the mid-600s, that would have been the establishment of the Islamic religion. Are those about correct?
Yeah, and basically there was never any specific Arab attachment to the land of Israel or to Jerusalem in any way before the rise of Islam. And then even though Jerusalem is not mentioned in the Quran directly, it is part of Islamic history of considered to be a holy place, not still in the level of Mecca and Medina, but still a holy place. And then there has been, just because of Arab conquest or Muslim conquest, when Islam spreads, here, Christians want to evangelize the world and spread the faith. Muslims want to spread the faith. But when they spread the faith, they also spread it in a way that brings domination. Islam fundamentally means submission. Islam does come with a system of law, and in its full form, Sharia law. So you now subjugate the people of the land, wherever you have conquered, to Islamic laws. If you lose that territory, it's considered to be an absolute terrible loss. It's an ongoing sore spot and wound. And that's what happened with land that for a time was under Muslim control, then under Catholic Church control, and then under different control over periods of time. For the Jews to have it again, is considered reproach, but not because this has been an ancient homeland or because of the history of the Palestinian people. There is not such a history. There are Arabs and peoples from many other nations who live there over periods of time. And if you go back, 100 years ago, or say 150 years ago, the land was lightly inhabited. There was more Arab presence than Jewish presence, but it was lightly inhabited. Then as more Jews came in, late 1800s, early 1900s, began to develop the land, began to buy some of the Arab land, then more Arabs began to come in. But still, there was peaceful coexistence until hostilities against Jews began to break out. And a key figure in this, who I've often mentioned, Haj Amin al-Husseini, was ultimately a friend and colleague in the war against the Jews of Adolf Hitler. And he is the one, in the 20s and 30s, was an influential leader as the Mufti, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, began to launch intifadas against the Jewish people. And yes, there was Jewish retaliation at times, but this was overwhelmingly Muslim violence against the Jews. This is the grandfather of groups like Muslim Brotherhood or Hamas or others who came out of that. And that's where these hostilities go back to. Let's also remember that Jews did not receive Muhammad as a prophet. And contrary to Jewish rejection of Jesus as the Messiah, which did not result in immediate persecution, physical persecution of Jews by the followers of Jesus. In fact, followers of Jesus were the ones most persecuted. The fact is that followers of Muhammad and Muhammad himself did attack and persecute Jewish people. So the hostility goes way back there. Hey, John, thank you for calling. The question is, has God restored the Jewish people to the land? And if so, yes, there still have to be calls for justice for all. Absolutely. But, you know, it's someone asked the question, how many civilians did ISIS slaughter? And where's the world outcry against it? There's shock and outrage, but where's the world outcry against it? Let's go a little further. 150,000, maybe 150,000 casualties in Syria. 150,000, the great majority non-combatants slaughtered between various Islamic factions. Israel fights back after being bombed day and night, after having three of its teenagers kidnapped and murdered in cold blood and under constant bombardment, with an almost endless system of tunnels being dug under Israel to come in so that they can kill and kidnap Israeli citizens, civilians, and others. Israel fights back and the world is appalled. Yeah, you say there have been several hundred Palestinian casualties. That's a tragedy. But if Israel wanted to inflict more casualties, they could kill tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. God forbid even utter those words. But I'm saying that's the fact. Massive restraint is being used, whereas Hamas is killing as many as it could. So Israel gets faulted for having better protection and better firepower. Please read my article, A Question for Israel's Critics, and circulate it widely. And if you are appreciative of us sounding the alarm, if you're appreciative of us getting the truth, come on. In Iraq right now, ISIS gave Christians in Mosul an ultimatum. You either convert to Islam, you pay the tax, or you get out, you flee. And Christians have had to flee from ISIS. And what does the world do about that? Why? Because it's not Israel doing something bad. It's Muslim extremists doing something bad. It's a shame, friends. It's a double standard. Of course, Christians caught in the crossfire here. We have some very important resources for you. They're timely, they're essential, and we've got them to you at a great discount. Three DVDs. My lecture is Israel and Evil Occupier. You need to sit down with your friends, show it in your churches, and then my debate with my friend James Michael Smith. Who is Israel today? Has the church replaced Israel? What about ethics in the Middle East today? And then finally, my debate with Dr. Don Preston on the promises to Israel. Are they all fulfilled or are they still future? Three DVDs, probably $45 value or more, $25 postage paid. But if you can help with an additional gift, that would be awesome. Call now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978, or go straight to my website. That's Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Great to be with you today on the air, 866-34-TRUTH, Michael Brown. I've been asking for an hour and a half, I've been asking a question to Israel's critics. I've been talking about what's happening in the Middle East, talk about imbalanced reporting, and try to give a perspective of justice and mercy and truth all combined. I'm switching subjects now, but if you missed any of the audio, if you missed any of the show thus far, please check it out later. Very important issues we're talking about, with resources that you can read, that you can listen to, that you can watch on our website, and some we'll be making available to you in a little while. I've got some very encouraging news I want to bring to you in the midst of the pain and the warfare and the challenges worldwide. But before I do that, let me start here. I wrote a couple of articles over the weekend. One, a question for Israel's critics. That's what we've been talking about earlier in the show. And then another one, the danger of an exaggerated end time mentality. The danger of an exaggerated end time mentality. You can read that by going to my website, AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article. And I've been thinking of writing it for a while, because whenever I report about the latest social moral collapse, someone will surely say, this is it, end is near, Jesus is coming any moment. Or, this must be the last great apostasy. This must be the last great falling away. Or when there's some report of war and conflict in the world, this is it, Armageddon is near. Now, I believe we should live with a sense of urgency. After all, we only have one life to make an impact for the Lord. I'm 59 years old. I want to run my race well and fulfill the calling of God and not be a spiritual has-been or a spiritual could-have-been. I want to be effective and make a difference and run my race so as to win in accordance with exhortations Paul gave in 1 Corinthians 9 and 2 Timothy 4 and exhortations in Hebrews 12 that call us to run our race and to put away the petty things of the flesh. So I want to do that. There's a lot of need. There's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of pain. Nancy's been talking to me about some of the stories she's seen on the news with some of the families. Grandfather was three grandkids, mother, son, different ones that were on the plane that was shot down over Ukraine. People die every day, but some situations are more tragic and more heartbreaking, seemingly more senseless than others, especially when it's just man's inhumanity to man. You think, what in the world are we doing? That suffering that we brought on and we caused. Of course, the conflict in the Middle East, and it's only natural to be longing for the Lord's return and the end of human pain and suffering and to be with him forever. But look, I heard Jesus was coming back any minute when I got saved in 1971. Those were the days of late great planet Earth, and it's all coming together, and look at it, we're going to be out of here any minute. Well, we're not. We're still here. As far as I can tell, we're not about to be out of here any minute. Oh, I want to live in such a way to be ready for the return of the Lord and be ready to be in his presence. I mean, we should all live like that, because no one has tomorrow guaranteed to them. But, you know, what if there was always this prophecy hanging over your head that your sports team was going to lose? And in the ultimate, the final season, they would lose. And they'd have a big losing streak first. What if you started losing a couple games, thought, this must be it. This must be the losing streak. I guess it's all over. Or someone told you, you better be real careful with your marriage because it could just splinter at any second and it'll be all over. And the first argument you have after being married for 3 days, you think, oh no, it's all over. What if you had that hanging over your head? It'd be a little tough to stand, to fight, to compete, so to say. Well, Christians have this thing that's often paralyzing them. Instead of recognizing what God's doing, instead of recognizing that we're in an era of great outpouring of the Spirit and great harvest of souls, every time there's something bad, people think it's all over. It's the great apostasy. We're out of here. And we just leave it to others to write their revolution into law. Now check out this article. We come back. We've got some encouraging news from where? The Muslim world.
Fire we want, for fire we
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I often on this broadcast alert you to things that are happening in the society. I often sound the alarm, often seek to wake up believers that might be sleeping, complacent, constantly trying to equip, strengthen, but always with encouragement, always with hope, because my eyes are fixed on the author and finisher of our faith. My eyes are fixed on the one to whom all authority in heaven and earth belongs. And these end days, these last days, these end times in which we've lived since the death and resurrection of Jesus until this time, these are marked by great apostasy and great deception and great harvest and great outpouring. So I want to alert you to what the enemy is doing and alert you to problems around us, but more importantly, keep you focused on the one who is working powerfully and mightily. And I'm joined in studio now by John Lambert. John is a grad from our School of Ministry. He and his wife and children served as missionaries in Thailand. He's based back in the States now, working at the U.S. Center for World Mission. And when I found out John was in town, I asked him to come by so that we could encourage you with what God is doing all around the world. Hey, John, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. It's nice to be here with you today.
Now, John, how long did you serve in Thailand?
Just almost 4 years.
4 years. And you went there with wife and children?
Yes, wife and two children, and we've gained one since we've come back.
All right, awesome. And just tell me for a moment about life in Thailand and Buddhist culture and mentality.
Yeah, Thailand is a beautiful country. Many people call it the land of smiles. People are just very warm and friendly. But it's also the home of Theravada Buddhism, and probably majority of the people from the cradle to the grave, all they know is the Buddhist way of life. And but many of them don't practice Buddhism. They practice more of a form of animism, which is just a worship of different spirits and ancestors and that sort of thing. So,
all right. And just broadly, obviously, you've studied Buddhism a lot, and it's somewhat complex. But in the simplest terms, do Buddhists believe in a personal creator God?
No, not at all.
All right. Do Buddhists believe in a concept of sin?
No, not in they. It's more of a concept of demerit, merit and demerit.
All right, and what's the ultimate goal of life?
The ultimate goal of life for them would be to do good in order to receive good. So, in order to just basically beat out the law of karma.
All right, and is there a looking to the next life or afterlife and reincarnation?
Yeah, actually, they believe in rebirth, that they'll be reborn. As a composite of many different kinds of elements. But they're not really hoping to get nirvana because you would have to ordain to become a monk. You'd have to dedicate your whole life, and you might have a chance.
And then nirvana, is that like a perfect, glorious existence or kind of a non-existence?
It's a non-existence, a ceasing to exist.
All right. So it's an interesting religion, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do they respond to the gospel? I mean, how do you translate the gospel for a Buddhist?
Well, you can't start with John 3:16. That's one thing. You can't just go in and start talking about God and love and having a son. You have to start with creation. You have to start with the nature that they see around them that they love and appreciate every day, and show them that there's complexity and design in that creation, and therefore there must be a creator, and then to get them to think about our responsibility to the creator.
And of course, God is moving in the Buddhist world. Mm-hmm. God is at work. But you, U.S. Center for World Mission, you have your hand on the pulse of a lot of what's happening around the world. Mm-hmm. Is the atmosphere one of despair and discouragement at the headquarters there, or one of hope and encouragement?
Definitely hope and encouragement. You know, we started in 1976 when people were really calling for a moratorium on frontier missions or missions in general. And many of the kind of brighter voices of that time were saying, this is not the twilight of mission, but the zenith of mission, the highest point, the brightest spot. Mm. And that was, you know, coming up on now 40 years. Of course, after the year 2000. A lot of what you were talking about, folks looking forward to the return of the Lord, really an eschatological urgency, thinking you know, we've got to complete the Great Commission. By the year 2000, we've got to have the unreached reached. And they really went for it in the 90s, and then after the year 2000, there was a kind of a falling off. And I think what you were writing about in your article has a lot to do with it, just a disappointment, you know, maybe a lack of expectation. And I think the Lord's about to do a resurgence of that expectation, and it's been good for us to really learn some lessons over the last decade.
All right, so you are not just speculating, sitting in headquarters speculating. You're working with missionaries around the world. You're working with indigenous leaders around the world. Many of the folks serving there, like you, have been on the mission field, some for many, many years. Give me just a feel, an overview, then we'll get specific, of what is happening in the vast Muslim world today as far as the gospel going out.
Yeah, I was just reading a book and a study by Dr. David Garrison of the IMB, which is the International Mission Board of the Southern Baptists. He wrote a book called A Wind in the House of Islam, and he actually says something is happening, something historic, something unprecedented in the Muslim world.
Mm. All right, and this is Southern Baptist leader.
Yeah, he's the man who many years ago wrote a book about church planting movements, how God was moving through church planting movements.
Yep.
What's the 10 essentials of a church planting movement?
Got it.
He's a very well-known and well-respected leader in the mission world.
And Southern Baptist, so he would be theoretically down to earth in terms of, if he hears reports about people being saved with dreams and visions, he believes it could be true, but he's going to check a little to find out. So we hear about all kinds of extraordinary things that have been happening for years now. Jesus appearing to Muslims in dreams, angelic visitations, people being given Bibles, and many thousands of Christians now in Iran, Muslims turning to the faith. From what you're hearing, are these accurate types of reports?
Yeah, they're very accurate. And others from many different backgrounds and denominations have been reporting the same things. And he actually writes about it in the book, and he tells this one story.
Just tell our listeners who he is again.
Dr. David Garrison of the IMB, the International Mission Board of the Southern Baptists.
Okay, go ahead.
Wind in the House of Islam. He talks about God is visiting Muslims through dreams, visions, and answered prayers in the name of Jesus. Virtually everyone who has worked in the ministry to Muslims can attest to the pervasive presence of the Holy Spirit. And then he says, a colleague has been serving God among Muslims long enough to have heard countless testimonies of dreams in which a being who shone bright as light appeared to them, beckoning them to come to him. In a recent encounter with a Muslim man who had experienced such a dream, my colleague simply opened his Bible to the story of Christ's transfiguration in Matthew 17 and invited his Muslim friend to read the first two verses. After 6 days, Jesus took him, Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up to a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as light. Matthew 17, 1 and 2. Startled by the discovery, the Muslim responded, "That's the guy. That's the guy in my dreams. Mm. Who is this?"
Yeah, you know, John, what's fascinating, and obviously in certain cultures, dreams play a more important part. I think with anyone, you have a jarring dream, it's still a jarring dream in any culture. But in some, there can be more spiritual messages. People are used to that. One of my friends has been on the mission field in Europe for over 40 years and did outreach to Muslims that came into Europe for years and saw very little success. They are seeing so many Muslims coming to faith now and working with so many Muslims who've come to faith from places like Afghanistan and Iran, and some of them wounded, some of them beaten, some of them imprisoned, shot. He's astounded. He drove out of his way just to see me last year because he just had to tell me more of the stories face-to-face. So he's been in the midst of it for decades and suddenly seeing this, and it's constantly accompanied with miracles.
That's right. In the times that we're living in, more Muslims have come to faith in Christ in the last 20 years than any other time in human history combined.
All right, say that again.
More Muslims have come to faith in the last 20 years, faith in Jesus, than any other time in human history.
So in other words, when you said combined, that would mean, according to the best information we have, if you took the number of Muslim converts over like a 1,400-year period,
correct,
the last two decades have seen more than that entire period combined.
That's right. We Garrison notes that there were probably, he counts about 82 Muslim background movements to Christ throughout all of history. 69 of these happened probably within the last 12 years.
Amazing. So we constantly hear of the spread of Islam, the growth of Islam, and of course that happens, but there's an unprecedented number of Muslims turning to the Lord. I want to talk about more of the dynamic behind that, John. Mm-hmm. What's going on spiritually that's causing that? And then just end, talk about America, your heart for America, and a friend of ours who's got great hope for the future of our nation. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
But by the way, I didn't want to forget this, changing subjects for a split second. I posted yesterday, Facebook tweeted out 2 Corinthians 7:1, which says, having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from everything that defiles flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. And I just said, although a lot of hyper-grace adherents have a problem with this verse, I embrace it with all my heart and just quoted the verse. And then someone attacked me for using poor hermeneutics, poor interpretation in dealing with the verse. And then someone else said, I never interpret verses in context. I don't use scripture to interpret scripture. That's why the Bible seems so confusing to me and my listeners. So I thought I was going to get involved for a little fun. I said, I just quote a verse. Where's the bad hermeneutics to quoting a verse? People, it's extraordinary. And then please give me an example of the bad hermeneutics. And in fact, I'm quoting it because I know the context and I live day and night using scripture to interpret scripture, which is why the Bible is not so confusing to me. There's never a dull moment. All right, back to my guest, grad from our ministry school, served on the mission field with his family in Thailand, now working out of the U.S. Center for World Mission in Pasadena, California, John Lambert. John, we're talking about the amazing harvest of Muslims, unprecedented numbers of Muslims coming to faith all around the world. And I wanted to try to explore the spiritual dynamics of that. How did that happen? What's the reason behind that? And you mentioned prayer, which is something a lot of people forget because you pray intensely for a number of years, but then sometimes it's a number of years before the answer happens.
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's many, many reasons probably why this is happening in the times that we live in, but prayer is definitely one of the main things. Even Garrison says here, he says, prayer has been the first and primary strategy for virtually every new initiative into the Muslim world. It is the great unseen force that has both stimulated Christians to venture into the House of Islam and pierce the hearts of Muslims whom they encounter there.
Mm.
And, you know, in the 90s, there were these new unprecedented movements to prayer that were happening globally. So it wasn't just North Americans or Europeans praying. We had the Global South involved, and Latin America was praying for the Muslim world in an unprecedented way. Starting in like 1993, I covered this in a recent edition of Mission Frontier magazine. 1993 started praying through the window, the 1040 window from North Africa to Japan. 62 nations of the 1040 window. It was called the largest unified prayer effort in the history of the church. For 31 days, 21 million Christians united with fasting and prayer, praying for nations in that North Africa to Japan corridor. And it went on. 1995, 100 gateway cities of the 1040 window, 36 million Christians from 102 nations prayed for God to touch people within the 1040 window. There were prayer teams, 407 dedicated prayer teams that went out from 48 countries that participated in 607 prayer journeys to these gateway people centers. And it goes on into 1997, 50 million people praying through the window. At that time, local churches were getting involved, and it went on 1999, praying through the window for people focusing on the 1040 window again for 31 days. Just
yes, I mean we all heard about it, 1040 window, pray mm-hmm. for these people and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's prayer movement, but then sometimes either you forget
mm-hmm.
or it takes a while. It's like planting seed.
That's right.
And then it grows. which is awesome encouragement, because there was also a lot of prayer for America.
That's right.
And a lot of prayer for our nation, and mass repentance meetings and solemn assemblies. And, you know, you want to pray and the next day see changes in the headlines. Mm-hmm. But that is great encouragement, John, yeah, to consider. And real quick, are you hearing about Muslims who are discouraged by the nature of Islam, or seeing the violence of Islam, the radicality of Islam, and that's a turnoff as well?
Yeah, I mean, back in the 70s, you know, when the Cultural Revolution was happening, and also you saw the Jesus people coming out in America. At the same time in Iran, many people were being disillusioned with the revolution that was happening in Iran with Ayatollah Khomeini. And many of them came looking for Armenian Pentecostal believers, looking for them to tell them the gospel.
Really?
And there was a massive movement in Iran, and still going on today. You know, we have our brother that is still languishing in a prison in Iran,
yeah,
for his faith. And so many Iranians were disillusioned with Islam, Kabyle believers in Algeria as well, and also in different parts of Indonesia. God has really been moving in different parts of the world. It's not just concentrated in one place, but many different segments.
All right, we've got 1 minute, but John, you work with a dear friend of mine, Lou Engel. Mm-hmm. And Lou Engel going to Berkeley in the fall to have an event, and is talking about Jesus Revolution, mm-hmm, by which we mean great outpouring of the Spirit and many people being radically saved, and then as they're saved, touching the world around them. Lou's a man of faith and prayer. Does he really think that there's another Jesus Revolution coming, especially to the young generation in America?
Yeah, I really do believe he sees that God has a purpose for America. You even see Reinhard Bonnke doing now coming back from Africa, doing crusades all throughout America. Just finished one down in Miami, going,
yeah,
to Greensboro. And Lou is doing this same thing, but he's also believes that prayer is preceding an awakening, and an awakening will precede a new sending, not just from America, but from all nations to all nations. There's, you know, Matthew 9:38, where Jesus says the harvest is plentiful. Was that true or not? It's true. Jesus said it. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Pray therefore the Lord of the harvest to thrust forth laborers, send forth. But the word there is ekbalo. Lou is really, he's gotten a hold of that, and he really says and believes that God is going to call people, but he's also going to send them. And so he's really given his life in the latter part of his years to awakening a generation in America. He's got a team and other teams that are joining with, but also unto a mission sending to the hardest, darkest places of the earth, the least remaining unreached people groups.
Awesome. And I'm quite sure that you and I will get to partner together with Lou on those things as God gives grace and strength. Awesome to hear. Hey, John, thanks for joining us, and thanks for the important work you're doing at U.S. Center for World Missions. Friends, sometimes in the midst of cultural, moral, spiritual chaos, I flip on the radio to listen to a particular voice in years past that I felt would bring clarity and make me feel sane again for that moment. And hopefully we've been able to function like that for you on the air, as your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. And we constantly hear notes of appreciation for that very thing, and we're grateful to God for that. That blesses us so much. So in the midst of the crisis going on in Israel right now, and world protests and UN starting to get involved, and who's right, who's wrong, it's so important to get the issue sorted out. I've got three timely, critically important DVDs for you. The first time we've ever packaged them all together. Just $25 for all three, so it's a great discount as well. My lecture at University of South Florida is Israel, an Evil Occupier. And then my debate with James Michael Smith, my friend James Michael, about Israel, is the church Israel today? What about ethics in the Middle East? And then with Dr. Don Preston, as we talked about the promises to Israel, are they still future, or are they all fulfilled in the past? Now, you could watch some of these on YouTube, but you'll get high-quality DVDs, and more importantly, stand with us at a great discount. Call now 1-800-278-9978 to partner. 1-800-278-9978, or go to my website, AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, the harvest is more ripe than it's ever been. Are you ready to be a laborer?